Today's April 16, 2015. This is a Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources. Today is a continuation of the public hearing on House Bill 5019, so we'll go ahead and open up a public hearing. Before we begin public testimony, we'll call up Lori Onnen and Dustin Ball.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Rayfield, thank you. For the record, I'm Lori Onnen. I'm with the Office of Governor Kate Brown. And I just have a few slides today to highlight some of the real important packages in the governor's budget for the Department of Forestry. And I wanted to mention that productive, well-managed forests can strengthen rural communities and improve the environment. And I'm going to talk about three areas, key areas in the governor's budget: investments in federal forest health, support for the Working Farms and Forest Task Force that's proposed in Senate Bill 204, and the Clean Water Partnership, which you have heard about before, but I wanted to touch on that for the Department of Forestry. So this is a slide talking about the federal forest health package, Package 185. Earlier this week, you heard from State Forester Decker about positive results from the state's investment of $2.88 million in federal forest health. The governor's budget proposes investing $6.05 million to further increase the pace and scale of federal forest treatment to improve forest health and reduce fire risk. And I really wanted to emphasize the very effective private, public, and local, state, and federal partnerships that have been enhanced by this investment. You see those partnerships reflected in the broad base of support for this package from local forest collaborative groups, businesses, conservation organizations, and local governments, and they're really doing a lot of incredibly good work. So what would Package 185 do? You heard this earlier, but again, I wanted to emphasize it's going to expand forest collaborative grants to the west side, and it will increase the work by the state and the federal government to plan and implement projects on the ground. And so the governor's office requests your support for this important package. And I'll just pause to see if there's any questions. I know you've talked about it.
Nope.
Seeing none, I'm going to speed through. This is a bill that passed out of the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee this week, passed to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. A key part of the bill sets up a task force on to look at obstacles to successful operation of working farms, ranches, and forests. The task force will study rates of conversion of working lands, conflicts between working lands and other land uses, and look at tools, additional tools for the state to help private landowners maintain active working lands while accomplishing conservation benefits. And this is a holistic approach to numerous issues about working lands that have been raised this session as well as in past sessions. And really, we want all interests to work together to look at the issues as a whole rather than issue by issue. The task force would be staffed by the Department of Forestry, with funding identified in Package 5002 in the department's budget. And again, we encourage your support for this package to fund the task force. And lastly, I know that Richard Whitman has been to this subcommittee during the OWEP budget and the DEQ budget presentations to talk about the Clean Water Partnership and the goal to move clean water trends in Oregon to consistently improving. Oregonians care about clean water, and clean water is essential to a healthy economy and a healthy environment. This slide points out Department of Forestry's role in this multi-agency effort, including implementing and monitoring the effectiveness of the Forest Practices Act and being involved in the voluntary measures through the Oregon Plan. Oregon is a national leader in voluntary collaborative restoration projects, and I think one of the intents of the Clean Water Partnership funding package is to help us tell that story better as to what's happening on the ground, how that's improving clean water, and what needs to be done, and focusing investments in the right areas. So with that, I will pause, and that's really it for my presentation.
Are there any questions?
Thank you.
All right, thank you. I will say that your slide presentation is much better than Mr. Whitman's.
I'll let him know.
The same thing to Mr. Whitman.
I know, but it's
Good morning, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dustin Ball. I'm with the Chief Financial Office. My presentation today is intended to provide you with a high-level overview of the governor's budget for the Oregon Department of Forestry. Over the last 3 days, the agency has done a great job in walking you through each of its programs and the proposed investments in the upcoming biennium. I know there's a lot of public testimony today, and in the interest of time, I'll move through my slides fairly quickly, but feel free to stop me if you have any questions, and we can address those. In developing the governor's budget, we looked at the emerging issues that the agency was facing, and these include the addressing fire risks and the fire conditions across the state, making sure that the agency has the resources to sustain its programs, and looking at the state of the federal forest management. We also looked at how the agency contributes to Oregon's 10-year plan. Particularly, we are looking at the healthy environments and the economy and jobs outcome areas. This slide is intended to provide you with a history of the agency's expenditures over time. On the far left, you will see the 11-13 actual expenditures. The middle is the current biennium 13-15 expenditure limitation. And on the far right, that is the 15-17 proposed governor's budget. A couple things I want to point out here is that large spike in the current biennium is really driven by the 2013 and 14 fire seasons. And that's the increase you see in the other funds and general fund expenditure limitation there. The other thing I want to point out is on the far right, there's that bottom green chunk, which is $10 million of other funds non-limited. And this is intended to allow the agency to maintain fire operations in severe fire years. These expenses are both unpredictable and largely outside the agency's control. The agency is funded by multiple revenue sources. General fund primarily funds the fire protection and the administration of the Forest Practices Act. Lottery fund is fairly new to the agency and funds the continued federal restoration work and debt service. Federal funds are received for the fire program, disease control, and landowner assistance. And other funds are derived from harvest tax, landowner assessments, and the sale of timber on forest lands that are managed by the agency. What we're looking at on this slide is how the revenue sources are spread across the main program areas. As you can see, the majority of general funds, again, are in the fire and private forest program. And the other thing you'll see on this side, again, is in the fire program, that $10 million, other funds non-limited, is in there. On the next three slides, I'll highlight some of the key investments in the governor's budget. There's a package to expand the investment to increase the pace and scale of federal forest management. There's a package to promote market opportunities for woody biomass, investment to build capacity of local rangeland fire protection associations, investments to improve the water quality and restore watersheds. We have an investment that would provide bridge financing to sustain the operations of the state forest program, provide for support and enhancements of the agency's forest electronic notification system, and we would provide a $5.1 million special purpose appropriation in the emergency fund for severity resources and for catastrophic fire insurance premiums. The governor's budget does include two bond projects. One is a $7 million bond project that would restore and preserve the state forester's office building, and the second is a $2.2 million bond project to procure and implement an integrated enterprise purchasing and procurement system. And if there are any questions to the committee, I'd be happy to address those.
All right. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
This time we'll go ahead and begin the public testimony part. We'll call up Jim Pena and Meg Mitchell.
So good morning. Thank you, Co-Chair Rayfield and committee members, I appreciate the opportunity to testify before the committee today. My name is Jim Pena. I'm the Regional Forester for the Pacific Northwest region of the Forest Service. I'm located in Portland, Oregon. My responsibilities include national forests in the state of Oregon and Washington and the delivery of state and private forestry programs through grants to the states. I'm honored to be here to speak to the value of the impact of the state's partnership involvement and investment with us and update you on the progress made in increasing the pace and scale of federal forest management in Oregon. Our partnership with the state of Oregon and Oregon Department of Forestry is creating a business model for federal-state cooperation that is recognized nationally and is attracting and leveraging additional federal investment. For example, midway through our funding cycle last year, we've received an additional $2 million for planning and restoration work in the Blue Mountains, in part due to the state's partnership. This funding was in addition to the substantial investment our agency was making in the Blues. This region has continued to has continued the level of funding this year, and our Washington office is committing several million more dollars for work in the region. State funds and expertise are helping us innovate and change how work gets done. State grants are also going directly to expand the capacity of citizen-based collaborative groups to achieve shared agreement amongst interest groups and communities. Oregon has a proud 20-plus year tradition of supporting forests and watershed collaboration. Without these groups and your help, we could not hope to tackle the restoration challenge by ourselves. I'd like to take a little time to describe my perspective on the impact of the $2.88 million administered by the Oregon Department of Forestry and the level and quality of engagement by state personnel, that level and quality of engagement by state personnel is having on federal forest health and management. State funds have helped expand the footprint of on-the-ground restoration work and jobs. A recent study by the Ecosystem Workforce Program completed by Universities of Oregon and Oregon State University cited a 16% increase in the jobs supported by restoration in eastern Oregon. There's also a substantial increase in wood supplying local mills, up in 2013 by over 50% from the time period of 2009 to 2011. We have used state resources in our partnerships in the Blue Mountains to provide or to move projects forward more quickly into the contracting phase by surveying and posting boundaries between federal and non-federal lands. This has an obvious benefit to neighbors and is necessary to move land management projects forward. State crews have also worked right alongside Forest Service crews in preparing thinning projects resulting in timber sale contracts. This has gotten work done quicker and has created synergy from our employees working together. It's also it has worked so well that we want to build on this in future by establishing a mobile interagency crew with a high level of expertise in this work to prepare and administer more of the contracts. State funds are helping seed innovations, not just doing business as usual. In the Forest Service, we're working to be more efficient and effective in the way we plan our land management work. This is important because planning is our highest cost center. In the Blue Mountains, the Forest Service has a dedicated federal team developing methods to dramatically increase the scale of environmental planning, looking at landscapes up to 500,000 acres at one time, and looking to reduce the time it takes to do that analysis by one-third to one-half the time. State funding has been strategically focused on leveraging innovative approaches to collecting and using data in the planning process. Together, we've invested in collection and use of LIDAR data to apply newer technologies that in turn help us focus the more costly data collection in the field. A year ago, other Forest Service teams developed and sold a large-scale 10-year stewardship contract on the Malheur National Forest, doubling the amount of wood going to mills, reducing forest fuels, and helping ensure a longer-term supply of wood and work in the woods. In the first year, the study I cited earlier has found that this contract has resulted in over $2 million in economic activity and supported 100 private sector jobs. On top of this, state agency personnel, representatives from the governor's office, county officials, and collaborative groups repeatedly hosted workshops and helped engage others in creative and meaningful ways. Having state personnel at the table, often leading these discussions, is of utmost importance to me. The $2.8 million administered by the Oregon Department of Forestry is growing capacity of collaborative groups that we work with and which are critical to our ability to increase the pace and scale of restoration. You all know the challenges of bringing diverse points of view together. The value of collaboration is much more than reducing litigation that can delay projects. They add jobs, social resilience, and enhance formal and adaptive learning in communities along with other intangible benefits. Through a grant process administered by the OWEB of State of Oregon has provided significant funding to build the capacity of these broad citizen-based groups and coalitions. When I say build capacity, I mean that these groups are reaching agreement over larger national forest landscapes and doing so by tackling more complex issues in less time. They're collecting inventory and monitoring data, often with students from local schools and universities, working with the latest science, and conducting broader outreach within their communities to expand meaningful engagement and increase the transparency of our planning and decision-making. Without the broader agreement on complex issues, we cannot succeed in helping forests and natural landscapes become more resilient to a changing climate. Oregon has some of the most mature natural lands collaboratives in the nation, and with about 23 of them sprinkled across the state, this is very good news for future generations. Our commitment to Eastern Oregon is and will remain strong into the future. And I'm committed to expand on innovations learned from different places and collaborative efforts across the state. We've made considerable progress to stand up the accelerated restoration approach in the Blues. We are producing tangible outcomes, and I'm committed to maintaining momentum across the forests of Oregon and Washington. There's much remaining to be done, and we will want to continue to be wise and strategic as we take advantage of future opportunities to increase the pace and scale in key places. One such opportunity I'm particularly excited about is using some new authorities in the 2014 Farm Bill, like the Good Neighbor Authority, to enhance partnership efforts with Oregon Department of Forestry and engage other state agencies. Most recently, we had a joint meeting down in Medford in Southern Oregon to kick off a new project that hopefully will apply those new Farm Bill authorities. I sincerely thank the State of Oregon and Oregon Department of Forestry for your partnership, leadership by example, and for advancing the quality dialogue regarding the role of state and federal land management. The professionalism of our employees working together in communities across the state honors them and our partnership, and our citizens deserve nothing less. In Oregon, we have some of the best models of state, local, and federal government working together. The state provides a critical link in that chain of relationships. When we work together, the citizens of Oregon and this nation are better served. Our citizens expect us to work together, taking advantage of what each of us knows or does best, bringing clarity to complex issues and processes, and being more efficient, inclusive, adaptive, and transparent. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak today and would welcome any questions you might have for me.
Do you have any questions? Yes, Senator Deborah.
I do. Thank you. I appreciate your comments and your approach to this subject. It seems like one of the key requirements for the success of these partnerships is going to be that people in the field like yourself are given a lot of flexibility to make decisions, and we're, you know, some of the authority is devolved down into the field. I know that's a real challenge for a large bureaucracy, you know, like the Federal Forest Management System. To what extent is that happening, and what do you predict for the future in terms of this sort of devolving of authority into the field?
I think the Forest Service has a history of decentralized decision-making, and so I think our objective is to get decision-making as close to the ground as possible. So our district rangers, which is our lowest level of decision-making authority, make many of the decisions that implement the restoration projects that we do. I think working with our partners, the state and other federal agencies, through these collaboratives is increasing the capacity for those local decision makers to make decisions and to have those decisions stand up when they get challenged. And that's what we're seeing in the Blues in particular, and is a trend across the nation where we see active, mature collaboratives where a lot of the really difficult issues get worked out and we put in place decisions that are supportable.
Senator Hensel. Thank you, Director, for your testimony, and I look forward to getting a copy of it because I think it was very, very important. I was privileged to be at the meeting in LeGrand where you and Representative Walden, I think it was kind of one of your early meetings, mm-hmm. perhaps, just coming out of the job, and it's really good to see the progression as, you know, the commitments you made then, you're making them come good. It sounds to me like from what you're finding in these collaboratives, I just want to verify that from what your testimony, is that they are particularly helpful in the planning, the data collection. I think I wrote it down, bringing clarity to complex issues, you know, getting all that groundwork so that when you begin to implement the sales or the projects or whatnot, they're less likely to be challenged or find fault with. Did I hear you correctly on that?
Yes, I think that's what we're seeing. In particular, the collaborative on the Mall here, the Blues collaborative, I see them going beyond that now and also helping with post-sale monitoring, post-project monitoring, and beginning to talk about, how well did we achieve our results? And that helps bring closure and increases trust and accountability for the agency. And my objective, hopefully, is that as these collaboratives mature, that will be the case more often so that it's not just the agency saying, here's what's going to happen and being expected to be the only voice substantiating what the results were. I think we're in a different time when the public doesn't always trust the government, particularly the federal government. And so the more we can get local interest and local voices supporting what's happening on these restoration projects, I think we'll be in a very good place.
Follow up. We had, we're in a series of full ways and means field hearings, kind of. And our first one was at in LeGrand. Mm-hmm. And we were able to help get a tour set up for those who want to do it through Boise. And one of the Boise Cascade plant there, and one of the interesting things I think for everybody here was how much of their product for the mill they're actually shipping out of other states, mm-hmm. where we've got three national forests right there with an abundant timber supply that's continuing to grow that is in, possibility of a fire or disease or mm-hmm. whatever. And I see the collaboratives as, and I said this earlier, perhaps the only game in town right now to be able to actually help manage the federal forests in a way with timber supply, and which is better for the environment and everything else. So I'm very supportive of it, and I appreciate your testimony today.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? With that, thank you very much for your testimony.
Right. Thank you for your time.
We'll go ahead and call up Deborah Schramm and Neil Schroeder.
Ready to go first?
Yes.
Okay. I'm Neil Schroeder. I am a fifth-generation Oregonian, and my family owns and manages about 300 acres of timberland in northwest Oregon. I had the pleasure this year of being on the Northwest Forest Protective Association Budget Committee. We have had to increase the assessments to private landowners to meet the needs of this increased budget. I also happen to be the president of the Oregon Woodland Cooperative. We are 60-some members in 15 counties in Oregon. Our purpose is to find ways to add value to our lands. And we do this in several ways. One is in selling firewood. We're selling firewood for $660 a cord.
How much?
Yes. And that happens to be wholesale. We have the New Seasons and Whole Foods markets in the Portland area that we're selling to, and we're selling bundled firewood. Our increase each year has been over 50% in bundled firewood alone. There are a lot of other ways that we find ways to increase our income. We can add jobs if we can work with government agencies, with forest agencies, with foresters, and find new ways to add values to our lands. We think we should pass this bill. Any questions?
Thank you, Senator Hensel.
Mr. Schroeder, I cut my own firewood. Is there any way I can get in?
Why, absolutely.
Market?
Yeah, me too.
$660 a cord. That's a
and that's just for Douglas fir.
Woo.
We also sell maple for $800 a cord.
So what I think you're doing probably is selling to my colleague, Mr. Denbrough's constituents that...
Entirely.
That's, yeah, all right.
I think we're going to go straight to the source.
Come right ahead. We enjoy it.
All right. Ms. Schramm.
Hi, I'm Deborah Schramm. I'm a businesswoman in Salem, Oregon. Actually retired a couple of years. My husband and I started a company out of our home. We took it national and then international and sold it a few years ago. We've been looking at opportunities in Eastern Oregon and a way to make a difference there. We both grew up there. I went to school in Elgin, Oregon. My husband went to school in Union, those big communities. We're starting a company called Heritage Sustainable Resources in North Powder, Oregon, population 440. What we're hoping to do is collaborate with government in taking biomass out of the forest, helping to eliminate forest fires. You know, as a layperson and someone who grew up in that community, we have seen jobs go away. There's six high schools in Union County. And unfortunately, what we're seeing, and I've seen this firsthand because I have family there, kids don't have a lot of the opportunities. We're getting rid of the vocational practices. They leave school, and if they don't go to college, many of them are not college bound. The old adage that a poor man goes to work and a rich man goes to college. And that's unfortunate, but that's what we're seeing there. So we're hoping to bring in some jobs again through the timber industry. We too are looking at doing firewood with kiln-dried process. So bringing science into this as well. And definitely the biomass money that has come from the governor is helping us. It's helping us to defray some of our costs for engineering and design. This isn't going to be a small operation for there. And what we're seeing also in those areas, it's 20 miles to go to Baker, it's 20 miles to go to LeGrand. And, you know, there's a convenience store where you can maybe buy Coca-Cola, beer, and some bread. And so we're hoping to bring, you know, jobs in where people are going to be interested in that again. There were many mills in that area. Those aren't coming back, and we know that. But there's been a long legacy of forest industry there that's just gone, and those jobs are gone. And looking over the statistics, that county says they're at a 7.5% unemployment rate, but I can tell you that those numbers are skewed just a little bit. in that. There are a lot of people that have dropped off the rolls that aren't reporting anymore. A lot of people, men, have left the area, left their families, and they're working in Alaska in the oil fields. They're working in the Dakotas. So you have moms, single parents, basically, at home holding down the fort. And socially, that's caused a lot of issues in that area. And the money that the governor is setting aside for these forest restoration projects are going to directly impact those areas socially. And so that's part of why we're doubling down. It'd be very easy for us to take our money and go to Nevada like our friends and play golf, but we believe in being socially responsible and putting something back into the community where we were raised.
Thank you. Ready question? Yes, Senator Hansel.
Well, thank you very much for your reinvestment. Appreciate it. I grew up and continue to live in Athena, so.
There you go.
I appreciate what
God's
you're
God's country for sure.
You bet.
Yes, Representative Hack.
Thank you. I grew up in Pendleton as well, and my husband graduated from North Powder High School.
Very good.
So thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you both. So we'll call up King Williams and Paul Errol back. We'll find out if that's how we really pronounce that.
Good morning, Senator Rayfield. Thanks for having us here and for the opportunity to come and share our experience. I represent Iron Triangle Logging, which holds the 10-year stewardship contract on the Mount Hear National
State
Forest.
State your name for the record.
King Williams.
Thank
I'm
you
sorry.
Very much.
I'm from John Day. I grew up there. You know, like the other people, I've been there for four generations, and my grandchildren are there as well. And we attempted to bring jobs to Grant County. But as the holder of the 10-year stewardship contract, I'm coming here to support the work that the state forestry, through their budget, has helped with the Blue Mountain Forest Partners Collaborative Group and the Mount Hear National Forest's ability to put projects up in order to meet the accelerated restoration work that the Forest Service committed to several years ago that Jim Pena testified to. And they have been committed to that project. They've been committed to increasing the pace and scale of restoration work on the east side forest since that time. And we're now at a rate of 75 million feet a year of output on the Mount Hear Forest, when we were averaging several years ago, it was a five-year average of about 8 million feet. And so we are substantially increased over those levels. One of the issues associated with that, as we all know, the state of the forests and of the dry forests in eastern Oregon included a substantial amount of non-saw biomass small material because of the nature of the way the forest management had been over the last several decades. So as a part of the stewardship and accelerated restoration, it's important that we find markets and methods of processing the small diameter biomass, and that's one of the things that Iron Triangle is working with, and we've been working with our partners on that as well. But as far as this budget goes for the Department of Forestry, the $6.05 million portion of that budget, which allows the state of Oregon to assist the Forest Service in doing the things that Jim Pena alluded to. I know as a member of the Blue Mountain Forest Partners since the beginning of that part of that collaborative group, that it's been extremely helpful to have some of these insertions by the state. For instance, the LIDAR that he referred to allows for projects to go forward when the Forest Service, in their budgeting process and in the way their monies were funneled and the different colors of money they had, didn't have that ability right at that time to do the projects that we needed. The same thing went with with some of the timber marking and sale layouts. They didn't have the crews in order to make the pace and scale go that we needed. State Forestry was able to step in And through the monies that were appropriated through the Department of Forestry budget, we're able to assist in that. And I can tell you that it's put projects on the ground that we wouldn't have had, because if you wait 3 months for something to happen, we're a whole season. We're a whole nother year in getting those projects out. So it's important that we work together. And I want to extremely support the inclusion of that $6.05 million for the assistance in the collaborative and the expansion over the other forests in Oregon. I know that what it's done for the Blue Mountains and the Malheur National Forest and for our project, and I know that it will help the others as well, as it's a model that we can expand on. With that, that's, if there's any questions, I'd be willing to answer them.
Thank you. We'll hold the questions until we complete the panel.
Okay, hello. My name is Paul Erlebach. I'm the school superintendent from the Neocony School District. Neocony is located in the North Tillamook County, from Bay City to Manzanita. So on behalf of the 800-plus students from the school district and their families throughout North Tillamook County, I encourage the legislature to work with the Board of Forestry to fulfill its financial obligations to forest trust counties by setting harvest rates on state forest lands that will meet our shared conservation goals while allowing for the maximum sustained yield production and harvest of forest crops. Like many other school districts in forest trust counties, the Neocony School District is reliant upon monies derived from timber sales on forest trust lands. In fact, we are more dependent, as we are one of the few districts that do not receive any state school support. Neocony School District receives its revenue through local funding, property taxes, and timber revenue. Approximately 25% of our district's funding is sourced from timber sales on the Tillamook State Forest. The Neocony School District uses these timber revenues to enhance educational opportunities for our students. However, since 2005, the timber revenue Neocony School District has received has decreased from $5,341,000 to $2,232,000. As timber revenue has decreased, district costs have increased. This decrease in timber revenue has forced considerable reductions in services and educational opportunities provided to our 800 students. Neocony School District does not receive increased funding provided by the legislature. The school district receives increased funding when there is an increase in timber harvest on the Tillamook State Forest. After testifying this morning to the Ways and Means Committee, I will inform the Neocony School District Board this evening of the necessary $200,000 in reductions to the general fund budget. This is my third year as a Neocony School District Superintendent, and the third year I have made considerable reductions to the general fund budget. Even with a reduced timber revenue, Neocony School District provides a superior education to our students. The school district is recognized for outstanding schools. The Halem Elementary is a Model 1 title school, the top 5% in Oregon. Last year, Neocony High School was ranked 16th in Oregon by U.S. News and World Report. For the past 5 years, Neocony Middle School has scored the highest level on the Oregon State Report Card, Level 5. These accolades are indicative of our high-quality staff and also represents or exemplifies that we are excellent stewards of the timber revenue we do receive. We have been able to build a strong foundation in large part due to funding from timber source lands in spite of decreasing, diminishing timber receipts and increasing uncertainty about funding levels. However, our ability to offer the quality education and services that our families expect becomes more difficult each year as state forest lands continue to go underutilized. The question I ask this committee is, how well could Neocony students perform with an increased revenue from a 70-30 timber management plan? As this body is well aware, the Oregon Department of Forestry is only harvesting roughly half of the annual growth on trust lands. And this is not a new trend. And every year, that excess volume is added to the growing standing inventory at the expense of the counties, communities, special districts, and school districts that are reliant upon equitable harvest rate and corresponding timber sales to fund critical services. New funding from trust lands is simply not coming in at the needed level. Our district has been dependent on reserves from 2007-2008, and that can only take us so far. As I mentioned earlier, the school district is in the midst of planning for our next financial year. And as it currently stands, the upcoming budget presents real challenges and tough choices that will impact our students and our employees on the horizon. And I know we are not alone. Besides the 125 Neocani School District employees and their families, entire communities throughout the state are looking to the legislature for action. I strongly encourage the legislature to work with the Board of Forestry to take steps to ensure an equitable management plan that will meet the twin goals of conservation and the social financial needs of small Oregon communities. We believe that dedicating 70% of trust lands to timber production while setting aside up to 30% of those lands for conservation will meet these twin goals. In doing so, the Department of Forestry will help school districts like ours continue to do our best for our students in the classroom, while also ensuring that these students have beautiful, healthy forests in which to explore. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I welcome any questions you may have.
Senator Hensel.
Paul, thank you for your testimony. A question I have, when the Neocani, my family has a cabin at Rockaway, I'm kind of familiar with the area. Do you share in the total harvest of the entire forest or just that portion of the forest that would be within your school district boundaries?
Just the area within our school district boundaries.
Okay.
And we receive 75% of our funding comes from property taxes and 25% comes from the Tillamook State Forest.
Okay.
And there are, I think, four school districts in Oregon that receive that type of funding. We don't have a choice. We have to accept it. And I think really two school districts that do well, and that's Jewell School District and the Neocani School District.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Hack.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say thank you for bringing forward the exact problems that we've been talking about for a long time, and I know we talked about yesterday, and it just becomes more and more evident that we've got a lot of work to do. So I just want to tell you thank you for taking the time to come and talk with us. Much appreciated.
Okay. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Senator Dimbrough.
Thanks. Mr. Williams, first of all, thank you very much for your comments and your work as part of the collaborative. You know, one of the challenges that I think we have with the collaboratives is that they continue to be an unheard success story. I mean, a lot of people don't really know just, you know, the great things that are happening out there. And, you know, I think that if we're going to, push for renewed life and move more and more to this model, we have to figure out a way to tell that story. And, you know, I know the department is making efforts, but I think a lot of people are still stuck in the narrative of, that very little is coming off of the federal lands. And, you know, as you say, we have made great progress. If we're going to build on that, we have to tell that story. So, you know, I wonder what it's like for you as you talk to people about this.
Well, one of the things, just a little explanation of what's going on, yesterday the Blue Mountain Forest Partners had a tour where we looked at a project that's called the Magoon Project coming up in the future. We were looking to provide input to the Forest Service on a new project. Today, the Blue Mountain Forest Partners is having our monthly meeting where the group gets together and talks about areas of agreement and projects that we got going forth. Tomorrow, like Jim Pena pointed out, the Forest Partners is going out onto a project that we've completed, and we're doing a third-party monitoring on it to where we're looking at it as a group, our members are, and saying, you know, did it meet the objectives to which we set forth for that project, as well as the Forest Service's, not just theirs, but our expectations. And we find that that's very important, and especially it's important to reduce litigation. Because we were bogged down in litigation until the collaborative process started, and we now have the one lawyer that stopped the Mount Here Forest, who was Susan Jane Brown, and she's now very involved and very instrumental in helping us come to zones of agreement on the Mount Here Forest, and in fact will support our projects in the courts if they're litigated.
Senator Hensel.
Just a follow-up to what Senator Dimbrough said and Director Decker, that might be something that the state forestry department would be able to bring forward successes in a way that, you know, the rural collaboratives have been doing. I agree with him that it's kind of a somewhat of a secret right now, but we need to bring that forward just as a suggestion.
Yeah, just to follow up, I mean, I talk about it all the time in my meetings, and you know, people in my district anyway, just, you know, have no idea that these things are happening, and they're very, very pleased to see, you know, to hear it, but they almost don't believe it, you know, because it's just coming from me.
It takes a lot of work. Is that the reason?
What does that say about you?
That was a joke.
Okay.
Very good. Well, thank you both very much. We'll call up Jim Josie and Tom Wolf back in the room.
He's right outside the door.
There he is.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Before Commissioner Josie testifies, I move we adjourn.
Rep. Gomberg, don't you second that motion. Well, Sir William and I served as county commissioners for some time, and then he decided to go down the path that I went down. I was 8 years in the Oregon legislature. Now he's in the Oregon legislature.
Mr. Chair, making a lot less money than he did as a county commissioner.
That's for sure. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Hansen, for that audacious introduction. I appreciate it. So I'm Tim Josie. I'm a Tillamook County Commissioner. I'm serving in my 17th year. Bill has me beat, but I might catch up with him. And then prior to that, I spent 8 years in the Oregon legislature. And if you do your math, you'll quickly figure out that it's very likely I was one of those that got term limited out, and which is the case. But I've been involved with the Council of Forest Trustland Counties. These are the 14 counties that deeded our forest lands to the state to be managed on our behalf some 70 to 80 years ago. And so I've been doing that since, for the last 17 years or 16 years, but the chair for, I think, the last 14 years. And so I've been very actively involved. The first thing that I want to say is that we do support the POPs. The Council of Forest Trust Land Counties support the POPs, but we do so with a great deal of consternation. The department is in big trouble financially, and we look at this as bridge funding to get them through the tough times. But we would like the legislature, especially the Ways and Means Committee, to explore some some budget notes that attach some performance measures so that this is indeed bridge funding that will indeed get them over the top. Let me talk a little bit about our budget, Tillamook County's General Fund budget. Tillamook County's General Fund budget is annual, but it's ends on June the 30th like yours. We experienced, because of lower than forecast state timber revenues, $1.4 million cut in the current budget. And so we didn't lay off people, but we cut everything that we could possibly cut, and then we instituted some furloughs so that we would get our budget back into balance. And now, in anticipation, like you folks are, we're in anticipation of passing a budget for next year. And it was really sort of sad listening to all the department heads. They got the note. They know we're in trouble. And always in the past, they've had their requested budget is sort of a wish list, and they know it's going to get knocked down. These folks didn't do that this time. They know we're in trouble going into the next budget, and their proposed or requested budgets are very, very conservative, sometimes even less than the current budget. And the sad part about it is we're still going to have to cut. We have about a $20 million budget. We're going to have to cut our budget by about between $1.6 and $1.7 million. There will not be furloughs. There will be people being laid off, and it's going to be very difficult. You received a letter from your records from Andy Long, our sheriff, If take a look at what this may do to his budget and the deputies that he has. And so it's a very, very difficult situation for us. You heard a little bit yesterday about the history of the lands. I'd like to give you a bit of a different history on the lands from our perspective. There's a lot of argument that we were over the ropes, that we couldn't afford to keep the land, we wanted to get rid of them. The truth is, some of that is true, yes, but the truth of the matter is the state forester at the time and the governor at the time wanted to create a state forest program, but they didn't have any forest lands. And so they came to the counties and they said, why don't you deed these lands to us and we'll manage them on your behalf and then we'll give you a share of the receipts. And it took the Forest Acquisition Act to pass and still didn't get hardly, if maybe no takers, maybe one or two, had to go back and amend the bill and got some takers. And so then gradually we transferred the lands in this trust agreement that we believe exists. And we were not financially on the ropes because World War II came along and all these trees, many of them dead from the Tillamook burn, were of high value. And so there was money to be made there. And so I think when you hear that we were forced to give up these lands because we couldn't afford them, there's an entirely different story. Let me talk a little bit now about the litigation that we've entered into, because I think it's important, and because it reinforces this trust relationship that we have with the counties. Several years ago, even before I was a county commissioner, the legislature in its wisdom wanted to take some of our state forest lands away from us and then deed it over to Willamette Industries, and Willamette Industries had a chunk of land called Crabtree Valley, and the legislature wanted to create a state park, and they started moving forward with that, passed the enabling legislation. We sued, and we went all the way to, we won at the circuit court, we lost at the Court of Appeals, and we won at the Oregon Supreme Court. Oregon Supreme Court and stated, as did the circuit court judge, that I think his name was Ertzgard, that there is a contractual relationship between the counties and the state. The second time we sued, Senator Denborough, you may be the only person up here that was here when that happened. It was back in 1995 or 2005.
No, I wasn't quite here yet.
So, well, that's good. Although, if I were in your shoes, I mean, if I'd have been there, I might have done the same thing. But the legislature was facing some difficult times, and so they were trying to balance their budget. And they started looking at some of these special revenue funds, and they looked at the Forest Development Fund, and the Forest Development Fund at that time was flush. So they said, we're going to take $10 million out of that fund. Now, that fund is designed that's the fund that the Oregon Department of Forestry uses to manage these forests on our behalf. They take that as part of their share that they take right off the top. That's that 36 and a quarter percent. Yes, 36 and a quarter percent. They take off the top, goes into the Forest Development Fund. So we told the legislature, you can't do that. And the Attorney General's office once again said to the legislature, yes, we can. You can do that. So we sued and we won. The state appealed the lawsuit, but what they forgot to do was notify all 15 counties, and so the appeal couldn't go forward. They appealed a decision that they couldn't go forward. That went all the way to the Supreme Court. They lost. And so, anyway, we won both cases. But I think it's important that Judge Behrens in the FDF lawsuit, or we call it Tillamook 2, his first ruling, he talked about all of the elements of a contract being in place between the state and the counties, and there are three elements, and it all has to do with a bargaining and an agreement and what you get in return for it. The second time he ruled. The second decision was, should the state pay interest on the money that they took? And the answer is no, because they'd be paying interest to themselves, and so that didn't make sense. But he says, I want to read this to you. He says, the state cannot pick and choose what parts of the statutory scheme it will honor or talk to the counties about before it acts, not in the face of the interaction between the counties and the state over many years working together under the statutory scheme, which envisions management of the forest lands to achieve the highest return to the counties. So keep that in mind, the highest return to the counties. Now I'd like to segue to, you heard a little bit yesterday about the greatest permanent value rule is supposed to be everything to everybody at all times. That's a quip for me. But the greatest permanent value rule, before I was a commissioner, they looked at that rule and tried to flesh it out and determine what it meant. And here's what I was told, and it's substantiated. I have a copy of this. You know, they talked about for the greatest permanent value means healthy, productive, and sustainable ecosystems that over time and across the landscape provide a full range of social, economic, and environmental benefits to the people of Oregon. And so then they talked about what those benefits are. And then the counties went out in the hall and they said, well, what about the agreement that the state has with the counties in terms of achieving the highest return to the counties? So they went in and they created a sub 2 and to address that issue. It says to secure the greatest permanent value of these lands to the state forester shall maintain these lands as forest lands and actively manage them in a sound environmental manner to provide sustainable timber harvest and the revenues to the state, counties, and local taxing districts. This management focus is not exclusive to all the other values, such as forest resources, but must be pursued within a broader management context that, and then it goes on and talks. And so that's the meaning of the greatest permanent value rule, and it just gets overlooked all of the time. The next thing I'd like to talk about, just briefly, this has been something that's bothered me for a number of years, and I want to go back to ORS Chapter 530, and which lays out the agreement between the counties. Much of this is written in contractual order, and I want to talk about the state forest subaccount. This was before I was a county commissioner. They didn't have enough money in the state forest subaccount, so they were at 25%, so they came to an agreement.
Mr. If I could shut you out for just a second, I was just given a second sheet of folks that want to testify today, and so we're now approaching going on quite a bit of time, and we're about 30 minutes left, so I'm going to have to basically reduce everybody to 2 minutes of time, so I'm going to have to ask you to start wrapping your testimony up as you're starting to eat into everybody else's time. So
I'll give Representative Gomberg and Senator Hansel my comments about the state forest subaccount. We are in support of the 70-30 plan, and I'll wrap this up with this statement. The 70-30 plan will take the forest to about 77% of the annual growth. It's at 53% now. And if we do that, it's going to have quite an increase to schools. Now, this is an important message. What the state keeps its 36.25%. The rest goes to the county. We distribute it out. What we distribute out, reconstitute that as 100%. 62% of that goes to schools. So that's money that you, the legislature, don't have to pay to schools because it's used as an offset. To the extent that you can increase, we can increase harvest in an environmentally responsible way to 77%, which is what our plan would do, of the sustained growth. We're still not harvesting at all. That would have a profound impact on your budget. And I happen to know that you're looking for another $50 million because of the Lloyd's of London premium. And so this would help. And so to the extent that you can encourage the Board of Forestry to do the right thing, develop the plan that we think is appropriate, and not do things like create old growth forests in the conservation areas that will be,
what
the Elliott Forest happened, where 93% of their forest closed down. A lot to say, I apologize, but there's a lot to know and to understand for you folks to do the right thing.
So thank you very much, and so I would apologize to everyone else. We do have about 30 minutes and 11 people to go, so is brief and concise would be appreciated. Thank you. Mr. Wolf.
Co-Chair Rayfield, committee members for record, my name is Tom Wolf, the Executive Director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. You already have my testimony on OLIS. We are here to support the ODF's budget, the Oregon Department of Forestry. We think they deserve this, and we support POPs 131, 132, and 133, in particular that affect state forests. Just real quickly, and I'll make this very, and I'll probably be, try to be less than a minute. I live in Washington County, the fastest growing county in the state of Oregon, and in Hillsborough, the fastest growing city in Oregon, also the 32nd fastest growing city in the United States. We're growing at a tremendous rate. We're the home of Intel, who attracts people to their business by showing all the green opportunities and all the fun things they can do in the forests of Oregon. And we live 30 minutes away from the Tillamook-Clatsop State Forest. So I applaud the Department of Forestry for their attempt to manage the forest for all groups, for recreation, for ecosystems, for timber, for the schools. And I come from a family of four generations of teachers. I certainly understand the need to pay counties through harvest for schools, but there needs to be recreational opportunities for people that live and work in our counties and want to use our forests as a place to unwind. I certainly think that's an important thing. We support what the department's doing. They're doing a great job. We don't always agree with them, but they're doing a great job. And in particular, POP 131. Thank you.
All right. Thank you both. Are there any questions? All right. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and call up Bill Cluding and Katie Fast.
Good morning, Chair Rayfield and members of the committee. For the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Farm Bureau. Oregon Farm Bureau actually represents quite a few small woodlot owners, and that's an important piece of diversifying their natural resource operations. We're in strong support of the fire package. It continues to implement the 50-50 split that was codified in the 2013 session. This is of special importance to our members in Eastern Oregon, where many are paying more in fire assessments than they actually pay in their property taxes. And so being able to control those costs and have a real partnership between private landowners and the state is critical for these landowners. There's also increased importance in the fire protection districts in addressing wildland fires and protecting rangelands and critical sage grouse habitat. Wildfire is one of the largest threats to sage grouse habitat, and this package is an important part of the governor's package in addressing and hopefully preventing a sage grouse listing. My last comment is around ferns and the ferns enhancement. We are aware that some of ODF's clients have struggled in utilizing the ferns program in this past year. They're probably, the ones that have contacted us are smaller landowners who are maybe a little less tech savvy and are struggling with limited internet connection. And as the program is enhanced and ODF is looking at it and as you're looking at that program, I think it's important to be aware that increasing the ease of use is critical as more elements are added to ferns, and also technical expertise and assistance is important, but also realizing that it does have actual limitations for landowners that are utilizing the program. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Cluding.
Thank you, Chair Rayfield. Committee for the record, Bill Cluding, Carpenters and Industrial Workers. I can't talk enough on biomass and the shape our federal forests are in. We got 5 million acres out there that need to be treated. The markets are just coming online, including foreign markets for biomass. There's a few things we need. We need that $20 tax credit for hauling. That's not in here, but it will be in Ways and Means. I urge that. Any restoration work we do in these forests, it creates jobs. Through hard work and past sessions, we closed a loophole where certain contractors could bring foreign workers in through Mississippi, whatever, paying them $6 an hour. Now the law is that they have to go through the employment office and hire local at prevailing wage. That helped. It also provides small logs for what mills we got left in eastern Oregon, southern Oregon. That really helps. Fires, I can't say enough about it. It slows down the process of fighting big fires. I'd rather have our people working, making biomass and salvaging logs than fighting fire. A little bit on the west side. We had some good questions yesterday. We had some good answers. I think if you talk with the Department of Forestry, I have been speaking quite a bit about something has to be done on the west side. The public doesn't realize the work the department goes through to figure out a timber sale. How many people's involved? All the different characteristics they have to study and follow the law, federal and state. They do an excellent job, but when the sale goes online, something happens. I urge this committee, I urge the people in this building, a task force is going to have to be formed with all the top people, the governor, the attorney general, all those involved. Somehow we've got to curtail the threats of an appeal to where these sales that are very carefully monitored, very carefully put together, can go online for the counties, the schools, and the Oregon public. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Hansel.
Quick question for Katie. Some of my constituents, and I brought this up with Superintendent Dechter earlier, but I want to know if Farm Bureau has been involved. Some of them are concerned about a double assessment, that if they're in a fire protection district, they're assessed, and then they also have the forestry. Are you guys involved in that as an organization? What's your thinking?
Probably is not as much as we should be. And I believe there's also some other bills this session in the policy committees that would increase that double assessment risk. And so it is something we're aware of and we're watching.
All right. Thank you both very much. We'll call up Peggy Lynch and Bob Reese.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. This is the last major budget. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan grassroots political organization that encourages informed and active participation in government. I apologize that our letter is not yet on OLIS, but I promise that it will be. So to make it short, we support POP 132, which is research and monitoring, and 153 related to water quality. The nexus that the League has with our studies related to water quality is the issue upon which I can speak today. We have supported the funds in multiple agencies related to the Clean Water Partnership, and we do so in this budget. We want to remind the committee of the department's mission to serve the people of Oregon by protecting, managing, and promoting stewardship of Oregon's forests to enhance environmental, economic, and community sustainability. So we support the stewardship foresters that we got in the last couple of biennia, the increase in stewardship foresters. We are excited about the new efficiencies that are happening with the new technologies that they have. We, however, are very concerned about the issue of herbicide spray, both the practice and the notice to nearby homeowners. Our leagues in Curry County, Lincoln County, the Rogue Valley, and the Umpqua are especially concerned. So we understand there may be some limited legislation that will pass this session related to the very real drinking water and public health concern. And so we look to the Ferns process in order to hopefully enhance that notification. We are concerned that there is a charge for public information. In the 1990s, Washington County had a charge for some of their public notice. We've finally gotten through that, so hopefully we can deal with that. The League supports our forest industrial lands, and if anybody wants to know more about coastal forestry, they can get a copy of our coastal study, which has a section about coastal forestry and its history. We hope that you will consider our request. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. My name is Bob Reese, representing both the Association of Northwest Steelheaders and the Northwest Guides and Anglers Association. For the record, we support policy option packages 131, 132, and 133, as well as 153. And one thing that's concerning to us is that a lot of the personnel that have historically dealt with the issues that these policy option packages reference were cut during a severe employee layoff period for the Oregon Department of Forestry during the recession. Yet the department necessarily needed to keep the timber harvest program in place to make sure revenue continued to flow to the counties as well as to the department. I'm from Tillamook County myself. My six-year-old daughter is in the Neoconee School District. And by trade, I'm a professional fishing guide of 19 years in Tillamook County. So these research and monitoring, specifically dealing with policy option package 132, is incredibly important to us. Of course, funding of our schools and where my daughter goes to school is critically important. But we also have an important industry to pay attention to in Tillamook County and on the North Coast. Sport fishing is a multi-million dollar industry on the North Coast, a sustainable industry. A lot of what we harvest on the North Coast is wild fall Chinook. It's one of the major fisheries that take place in that area. And one of the most critical factors that determines the success of wild salmonids is water quality and the temperatures that they experience during the critical summer months that their life histories require. So we work very closely with the Department of Forestry in maintaining adequate habitat, riparian habitat in particular, on the Tillamook and Clatsop State Forests. So these policy option packages are critically important for us to understand the research and monitoring needs for wild salmon, as well as a recognition of the recreational and tourism industry that exists there on the North Coast. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions? All right, seeing none, we'll go ahead and call up Chris Smith and Bruce.
Doc Savage.
There we are.
After you, Chris.
All right. Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chris Smith. I'm here on behalf of the 16,000 members and supporters of the Oregon Chapter Sierra Club and the roughly 5,000 supporters and 100 business endorsers of the North Coast State Forest Coalition. I'll keep this very brief. We are strongly supportive of policy option packages 131, 132, and 133. We think that these are crucial to enabling the department to continue to manage these state forests in a way that provides the diverse range of values that Oregonians expect. They also are a reflection of the contribution Oregonians should make to a forest that contributes back to all Oregonians. I don't have much to say more. I'll submit some written testimony, but I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. We appreciate your brevity.
Sure.
Good morning, Co-Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bruce Doc Savage. I'm the president of Ochoco Lumber Company. We have the sawmill in John Day, Oregon, that has been the recipient of the stewardship contract off of the Blues. I'm here today to ask for your support of the Oregon Department of Forestry budget, and in particular, the $6 million that we're looking for of lottery funds to help progress and enhance the collaborative process. Much has been said this morning about the collaborative process, and who are the collaborators? Well, they're constituents of all of Oregon. We have Oregon Wild. We have the Nature Conservancy, Sustainable Northwest, the Western Environmental Law Clinic, and local members of the community and local politicians and leaders of these communities. Our mill in John Day depends upon the good work the stewardship contracts put forward. We have created a biomass system with our sawmills to take advantage of the low-quality fiber that's coming off of the national forest. We have compressed bricks, we have pellets, What I heard this morning is we probably should get in the firewood business. I can't sell lumber for that amount of money. But in any event, our products are used throughout the United States. Currently, locally, we use our biomass products in schools and in public buildings. The airport has a biomass facility, and that comes from wood that's coming off of the national forest. The question this morning, the comment regarding what's going on with collaborators, we don't hear much about them. One of the asks for the $6 million is to expand our efforts with the collaboration. There's many collaboratives that are set up throughout Oregon. We need to sell and tell you more stories about how these are working. Part of the funding that we're asking for you today is to expand beyond the east side of Oregon in a lot of your districts, the efforts and the successes that we can go forward with the collaboratives. One of the things I briefly want to talk about is the efforts of the Oregon Business Plan. And part of what the Oregon Business Plan is attempting to do is putting our natural resources for Oregon to work. And the governor has embraced these processes and the Oregon Business Plan. And so we think that this collaborative effort, the stewardship contracting, and the biomass work, and we need more work and more funds to progress with markets in our biomass. Also, the credits that we're looking at would be very, very helpful in bringing a low-quality product out of the woods. In the end, we're talking about jobs, 101 jobs that Jim talked about this morning. Those were our mill jobs. Senator Johnson asked me a couple of years ago, or told me, I should say, that I want to know, and you're going to tell me in a couple of years, is the investment that we made in the collaboratives working? And I'm here today to tell you it's worked. And it's worked beyond our expectations. This is just the start of it. We think that more jobs will be created, the forests will be thin for the health of the forests, and perhaps one of these days we can get the Department of Forestry will ask for less money for the fire protection. But we think the federal side of this is starting to move. So do you have any questions?
Questions? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and call up Megan Nuss and Christina McNeil.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Megan Nuss, and I'm the project development coordinator for a private business called Wisewood. We're based out of Portland, and we do biomass energy projects. We work primarily in rural Oregon. We also work outside of the state. We are responsible for the biomass boilers that went into Grant County that Bruce mentioned just a little bit ago. We mostly do small-scale thermal boilers. And I'm here to support the biomass component of the ODF budget. We, in the communities that we work, in the projects that we do, it's so valuable to have the support of agencies like ODF who can provide education, they can provide information, and of course financial resources for communities that often lack those resources to really consider what their options could be for biomass. There's a lot of places that could really benefit from the kind of projects that we do, and they may not know about those options, or they want to know more information from a neutral party like ODF, and it's so helpful to have them be able to provide those resources. And the dollars that have been available to help fund pre-feasibility studies and feasibility studies have been very important for the communities and the entities that we work with. And just to give you more of a sense, these projects can do a lot of economic good for rural communities. Schools can save thousands of dollars in their energy costs, dollars that would have been spent on imported fossil fuels instead are retained locally, can be reinvested in their in higher quality services in their communities, and is also going to local resources, to the biomass that's around these communities. So in many ways, these projects are valuable, and the support that we as a private business gain from having partners like ODF out there who can also provide expertise in this field is extremely valuable. So we definitely support the biomass component of the proposed budget.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Co-Chair Rayfield and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Christina McNitt, and I represent the Oregon Forest Industries Council. As I think you've learned this last week, nearly half of Oregon is forested, and these forests touch every part of our economy, from raw material for wood products to forested landscapes that give Oregon its quality of life. While the federal government owns and manages 60% of the total forest in our state, only a fraction of the harvest comes from this land base. Nearly 80% of Oregon's harvest comes from private timberlands, my members and the members of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. Even during the Great Recession, Oregon remained the number one U.S. producer of plywood and softwood lumber and directly employs today almost 59,000 Oregonians. Except for what we call the Great Recession during 2007 and 9 and the collapse of the housing market, harvests from private lands have remained relatively stable. Oregon's timber harvest reached a modern era low in 2009 with the smallest harvest since the 1934 Great Depression, and many of our members will tell you that was another depression for them. But by 2013, the harvest level had rebounded to 4.2 billion board feet, roughly pre-recession levels. On Oregon's private timberlands, the amount of wood harvested each year is almost equal to the annual growth, so somewhere in the low to high 90% of annual growth. The year-to-year differences are driven by landowner objectives and market conditions. Under its private forest division, the Oregon Department of Forestry regulates these activities for the purpose of protecting the public's environmental resource values so integral to Oregonians. Unlike any other natural resource agency, ODF is not funded with user fees, but rather by taxes. The forest harvest activity is taxed for the purpose of funding 40% of the administration costs of administering the Forest Practices Act, including monitoring and enforcement. Another mission-critical function for the Department of Forestry is fire protection. Again, landowners are heavily committed to partnering with the department to provide a complete and coordinated system. That's something that we value. Landowners match Oregon's general fund investment 50-50 to provide base fire protection. However, when it comes to the cost of actual fire suppression, these costs are unequally borne by landowners and paid through a variety of taxes collected in the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. Oregon's landowners personally understand, unfortunately, all too well, the extreme concern around the escalating costs of fire suppression. While the past 2 years have been historic, since 1992, landowners alone have paid almost 70% of the actual costs of fighting fire, with a general fund occasionally tapped contributing 33%. In actual numbers, the delta is $94 million more paid by landowners than the general fund. No other state in the country has an insurance policy to protect its general fund, nor does it have landowners that partner and pay anywhere near what Oregon landowners do. In fact, in California, for example, the general fund shoulders both the cost of base fire protection and the cost of fire suppression. Interestingly, our agency is not called the California Department of Forestry. It's called CAL FIRE. I can't speak of fire without stating the obvious. These are just the fire suppression costs only, and they don't represent the costs associated with the lost asset base, the costs of salvage and replanting, the ecosystems blindly destroyed, or the extreme level of carbon emissions. Fire is wicked.
Ms. McKinney, we have about 5 minutes left and three people to go, so you could.
So I would like to encourage the questions that were provoked by this committee around fire and encourage you to continue them. especially about transference of risk and whether or not it's fair that those policy decisions pay at the same rate as private landowners. The last program I'd like to address is State Forest. While you've heard that the department says the program's not generating enough revenue to sustain itself, the general discussion around this challenge has been focused on the economy. We would say the second part is that Oregon can't afford the style of management inherent in the 2001 Forest Management Plan. 2 years ago, OFIC.
I am going to have to ask you to wrap up as we have three people left and not enough time, unfortunately.
Respectfully, I'll conclude my comments. We are not at a point where we can support the department or its KPMs at this point. We're looking forward to hearing more and prioritizing. And I would just like to say of the three programs, we have 3 minutes to talk about funding 40% of one of them and 50% of the second. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? All right, seeing them, we'll call up Joel Fisher and Roger Beyer.
Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, my name is Joel Fisher on behalf of the Oregon Business Association. I've been working very hard for the last 3 months to grow this beard so that I fit the part when talking about the forestry budget. We spent the summer traveling around Oregon with the Oregon Business Council and Business Oregon, Oregon's Economic Development Agency, going to about 17 different cities, meeting with local business leaders, talking about what are the issues that we can do to really affect economic development and turn things around in rural Oregon. The number one issue that came up was workforce. The number two issue that came up everywhere across the board was the forest collaboratives. As far as natural resources go, it was the number one issue in terms of natural resources. People are telling us they're working, they're restoring forests to health, they're keeping and retaining jobs, they're keeping mills open. So we are here to support POP 185, and we'd also like you to support POP, I believe it's 152, the Biomass Market Development Initiative. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Roger Beyer. I'm here to represent Oregon Small Woodlands Association. Oregon Small Woodlands Association is one of the partners of Department of Forestry. Our landowners own about 100, and we have about 140,000 landowners, about 40% of the private forest land in the state. I'd like to speak specifically about the private forest program. It's very important to our landowners. Our landowners don't have typically professional foresters and staff, so that's a very important part of the budget for our landowners. In addition to that, it is fire. Obviously, our assets are at risk, just like the assets of the large forest landowners. We are very aware of the fire budget. Our landowners pay in the highest percentage of the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. So any conversations about that, we want to be at the table. It's very important to our members both to have the fire protection, but also recognize the fact that we pay for the largest percentage of the large fire costs. Two more things. The biomass POP is very important for those small wood landowners in rural Oregon, especially eastern Oregon. They need markets. The infrastructure of traditional sawmills has collapsed in eastern Oregon. There is virtually no value left for the forest products for our members in eastern Oregon because of the harvest costs and the distance they now have to ship to mills if they can find a mill for their product. And finally, just on the issue of state forests, and I'm going to step back as a small woodland owner somewhat, as a representative of small woodlands, and as a small woodland owner myself, I am a member of OSWA. I do have my own forest lands. And when it comes to state forests, I was interested in the people talk about the need for recreation and to have the state forest not harvested or managed for recreation. And I'm here to tell you as a small woodland owner myself that if you can find a way to keep my neighbors out of my heavily managed forest, maybe I need to talk to the Department of Forestry and find out what they do to make their forest so undesirable once they've been managed, because my neighbors seem to think my forest is very desirable to recreate in. And I don't understand the conflict between recreation and management, because it does not exist on my farm. So maybe I need to find out what they do to keep people out of their forest, because it certainly doesn't work on my forest. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions? All right, seeing none. Meg Mitchell, has she come back in yet? Okay. Is there anybody else who would like to testify today? All right, seeing none with that, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing and adjourn the meeting.